Hello, I'm Dan Miles. This is number 0282, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0282. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Carla Valentine, the founder of Dead Meat, a dating service for people who work in the death industry. You know, meeting someone can be difficult when you work in such a profession.
The reason there can be a difficulty in finding someone that you can share your day with is that because it's a very quiet, sort of closed off profession where you're not really supposed to talk about what you get up to day to day. So it sort of makes sense to be with someone who does the same job. And then that way, you know, you can really understand what your partner means when they say they've had a bad day, because it's very different to a bad day from somebody who works in a shop. So there's definitely a difficulty in having dates with normal partners, as I said, you know, non-death industry partners.
Numerologist Yogi Akal, or as we like to refer to him as Aggie Akal Singh Khalsa, numerologist of the stars, is on to talk about the numerology of 2015.
We've just come out of a period, numerologically speaking, that is very much of a testing challenge. And over the next 3 years, 2015, 16, and 17, we're really reestablishing values before we take another leap in terms of this century. This is going to be probably the most impactful century we've had in at least 500 years. It's a different kind of renaissance where we are shifting everything in our entire understanding of the world.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge and his take on the New York City current unrest and the death of a cigarette seller.
He was selling loose cigarettes. In other words, not in packs with tax things on it. And he's already been arrested like 30 or 40 times for doing it. And once again, the storekeepers in Staten Island were complaining about this guy selling the cigarettes. So a black sergeant lady organized a squad of the meanest, nastiest white cops she had and took them over to arrest the guy and was present while they were beating the hell out of the guy. And she was the boss.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff. And of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0282 was Dan Miles, who is the host of Friends of Dan Music Podcast. Now, if you want to hear some great music surrounded around really intelligent, long-form interviews, then you have to check out the Friends of Dan Music Podcast. You can find the link to Dan's show by going to the Stuff File What's On page for this show, which you just heard Dan say you were paying attention, right? That's 0282, and you'll find the links to Dan's show. I urge you to give Dan's show a listen. Again, you will be much smarter for doing so. And thank you very much, Dan, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And here now, boys and girls, let's just get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, you know, people love their pets, and those people reached a new high in December when a British man paid a veterinarian the equivalent of $500 to perform delicate surgery on a sick office goldfish. By the way, typical pet store replacement for a goldfish is somewhere between $1 and $5. Vet Faye Bethel of North Walsham, England, told the Eastern Daily Press in December that there was nothing special about the fish, but that the customer just liked it a lot. In fact, the goldfish likely didn't even have a pet name, as Bethel in an interview spoke intimately of another patient named Cadbury the Skunk. Anyway, Bethel's procedure involved removing the patient from the bowl, flooding its gills with anesthetic fortified water, and using a tiny scalpel to remove lumps that were causing it constipation, with the surgery guided by a miniature heart rate monitor. Okay. What I'd like to know is, how do you even recognize the fact that a goldfish is constipated? I mean, do you sit there at the bowl constantly with a clipboard and a chart? And goldfish really all do look alike. So are you sure you paid $500 for your fish to be taken care of, and I'm doing air quotes here, or did you really pay $500 for a new fish? That's what I'd like to know. Anyway, Iraq's government-run channel, Iraqiya TV, has a reality show reminiscent of American confrontational programs, but is designed to force captured ISIS fighters to acknowledge the pain that they have created. Now, one episode in the Grip of the Law, described in a December Associated Press dispatch, showed family members of car bombing victims on a street corner in Baghdad haranguing one of the men convicted of the crime. A young man in a wheelchair, having lost his father in the attack, faced off against the convict, screaming until the jihadist began weeping as the cameras rolled. Wow, this is like Jerry Springer for terrorists. How is this seen as entertainment? I've said it before and I'll say it again. We are all getting one step closer to living the world of Shirley Jackson's The Lottery. One step closer. I kid you not. Over here on my right side, a handbasket. Its destination? Apparently hell. Undersheriff Noel Stephen of Okeechobee County, Florida, acknowledged in December that among the public services his office performs is supervising parents' spanking of children. After two sisters argued on December 29th, their father decided to administer a whipping to one of them and asked Deputy Stephen to drop by and make sure he was staying within the law. "That's not something we advertise to do," said the deputy, but he estimates he has monitored about a dozen spankings. Oh, I'll bet the kids are oh so thrilled with the idea of an authoritative witness to see them being spanked. Isn't there anybody who is slightly creeped out by this? Anyone? Anyone? Bueller? Yeah. Reports out of China tell the story in December of the arrest of a man in Yulin City accused of stealing more than 2,000 items of underwear from women in his neighborhood, taken within the last year. He hid his stash above ceiling tiles in stairwells in his apartment building, but he drew attention when one of the ceiling spaces caved in from the weight of all the garments, showering the stairs in an array of colorful lingerie. Just within the last month, according to Hong Kong South China Morning Post, two other men in Zhejiang and Hubei provinces have been detained for similar crimes. In the latter case, the alleged thief was also wearing the lingerie. Well, that's some championship-level theft going on right there, don't you think? Yeah, I thought so too. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, artist Megumi Igarashi, age 42, known as No Good Girl in Japan, taunted officials with over-the-top pornography twice in 2014. First in July, when she designed a kayak in the image of her genitals, and then sought donations by sending contributors data on how to make a 3D printed model of her vagina. In her December arrest, according to the BBC News Dispatch, she had complained of the contradictions in Japanese culture that allowed glorified public displays of the penis as a symbol of fertility, but banished the vulva from public sight. I got nothing to add to that one, so just enjoy the images in your head, okay? Let those wash over you. And while that's happening, let's just get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Carla Valentine works at Bart's Pathology Museum in the UK, so she is someone who makes a living in the death industry. That can be a problem when it comes to dating, so Carla is also the founder of a dating site called Dead Meat, and that's M-E-E-T, a service that helps to find like-minded industry types. Carla joins us on the line right now via Skype-to-Skype communications from the UK. Hi, Carla.
Hi.
Thanks very much for being on the program with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, you started this back in the spring of 2014.
That's right.
Was it a situation where there was a frustration in meeting people that made you want to start Dead Meat?
To be honest, it wasn't for me, because I've actually been with my other half for over about 2 or 3 years now. But I actually met him on a dating site all those years ago. And it was just something that was in the back of my mind for a while. But at the same time, I also put on events and you know, things in the pathology museum, and I was trying to find speakers as well. So it's a dating site and it's a networking site as well.
Now, did you find that, again, not maybe for yourself, but for other people within the industry, that they had a problem meeting like-minded people?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think obviously before I became attached, I dated my fair share of undertakers and whatnot because I worked in mortuaries. And the reason there can be a difficulty in finding someone that you can share your day with is that because it's a very it's a very quiet, sort of closed off profession where you're not really supposed to talk about what you get up to day to day. So it sort of makes sense to be with someone who does the same job. And then that way, you know, you can really understand what your partner means when they say they've had a bad day, because it's very different to a bad day from somebody who works in a shop. So there's definitely a difficulty in having dates with normal partners, as I say, you know, non-death industry partners. And what I found was that a lot of couples around me were forming naturally in these kind of, you know, groups of mortician and mortician, or undertaker and embalmer. So it was just an extension of that.
Now, when you say people understand you when you explain that you had a bad day, for someone within your profession, what constitutes a bad day?
Well, I mean, there's, you know, there's an awful lot of stuff I wouldn't really talk about in terms of just dignity for patients and whatnot. But if
right.
you can imagine, it could be a bad day. Maybe you've had a particularly difficult case. You've had to work on a particularly long autopsy, a criminal investigation or something. Or it could be something that you might consider slightly more humorous. You know, maybe you've ended up with maggots in your Wellington boots. And it's the kind of stuff that when you've had a bad day, you can't talk about that over dinner with somebody who doesn't really work in that industry and understand you.
Got you. Now, since you started this, how many people have signed up?
There's about 8,000 or 9,000 at the last count.
Wow, that's very impressive. Were you concerned at all, or since you started this, has there been a concern that there might be some people who don't take this seriously, that poke fun at the whole concept?
I think part of the problem with jobs like this is that we're seen to maybe not have a sense of humor, or that it's inappropriate to have a sense of humor. And in a way, I don't mind this idea that people might poke fun at it, because it is supposed to be slightly tongue-in-cheek. You know, I mean, even the name is a bit of a pun. But sometimes things have got to be humorous and engaging to then give you a platform to actually talk about the important things. So, you know, on the face of it, it does seem like quite a funny idea. You know, morticians need to meet each other on a dating site. But at the same time, they also find research partners. There's a real community. And I haven't had any negative feedback at all, which I'm actually surprised about.
You know, it's interesting that you say that there are people out there might think that those in the death profession might not have a sense of humor. I don't understand that. I just find that people who might think you folks don't have a sense of humor are the people who themselves don't have a sense of humor.
I would absolutely agree. And, you know, you can see that there's obviously a certain level of humor that's allowed or is appropriate in a job like this, because it is very serious to work with deceased individuals or dying individuals and work on crimes. But at the same time, you know, you have to be able to enjoy life and you know, you have to kind of poke fun at yourself as well. So it is meant to be slightly tongue-in-cheek, and I think that people shouldn't be afraid to have a bit of a sense of humor around these professions.
You would also think that someone in the death profession would be a good partner. And the reason why I say that is because there's a certain amount of compassion that I think draws a person to one of these particular professions.
Absolutely. You know, there's either a lot of skill involved or there's a lot of intelligence that's necessary. You have compassion, caring for other people, integrity. And like I said, you know, one of the first things I was told was that it's really important to just give treat every patient with dignity. So that means not, you know, talking about your job flamboyantly on the bus. So there's a real sort of sense of integrity, I think, with people who work in these professions.
Now, Dead Meat, your site, is it only within the UK or has you expanded beyond that?
Oh, it's worldwide, because it's obviously the internet, you know, and it has a wide reach. And there are a lot of members from the US, but there are members from sort of France, Belgium and places like that too. So I really do, you know, encourage anybody who wants to just to go ahead and join.
So people who are there people who join Dead Meat who are not within the death profession, or do you have to be?
Well, the drop-down menu on the homepage does suggest different jobs that you may be doing, for example, embalmer or funeral director. But it also says researcher and it says student. You know, and there's nothing to stop people who are interested from joining the site if they don't work in the profession. Because the reality is, I, for example, get asked a lot over the internet, how did I get into my profession? So people may want to find someone that they can see who might be able to guide them and give them some encouragement or some career advice. And as I say, you may not work in the death industry, but you may want a speaker or a research partner who does. So it's not just for people who work in the death industry.
Has there been any side benefits out of this for you? And by that I mean, have you been surprised, for instance, by gaining knowledge about maybe how something you do simply in your job where you work is done slightly different in a different region of the world or country?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a huge difference between how autopsies are done, for example, in the UK and in the US. And the real benefit for me, I mean, apart from the fact that it has a wide reach and therefore people are now learning about my pathology museum at Barts, which is has been in disrepair for 20 or so years, so it, you know, didn't have a huge following. The other benefit for me has been that I found speakers to come and speak here. So it's just constantly developing a network and a support network, really.
Speaking of which, let's tell a little bit about where you work at Barts Pathology Museum. I saw a picture, I guess it was in, Vice Online?
It's been on Vice.
Yeah. Yes, and there's a picture of you with two giant jars, one of them with a foot.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about a little bit of what it is you do.
So what I do at the moment is I'm the technical curator here at the Pathology Museum, which was built in 1879, and it's purpose-built for medical students of the time. So the specimens are very old. The oldest one we have here is 1750. My job is to go through all the parts, record all the correct information, repair them, like change the fluid, for example, which might be cloudy, rehang them, sort of make them look antique, even though they're brand new, and then put them back out on the shelves for people to learn from. So the foot that you mentioned was a bound foot of a Chinese woman. Of course, the practice of foot binding went on for about 1,000 years. And it just shows the incredible sort of bone and tissue deformity from that kind of practice.
It's fascinating stuff indeed. And I just think it's commendable that you saw a need for people who are within your profession and you went out and solved it with your site, Dead Meat.
Really, it was just a case of I I kind of exhausted all my, you know, my friends on Facebook and my LinkedIn and whatnot. And I thought, if I'm trying to find an embalmer or someone to do a lecture, you know, how else can I find someone? I thought, I wish there was a LinkedIn or something specifically for us. And then I thought, well, create one then.
Yes. What do they say? Necessity, the mother of invention.
Exactly, yeah. So it's been just as beneficial for me as hopefully it has been for the members.
And when you mention all the people who are involved, I think we also discussed nurses, for instance, are within that group as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know if it's exactly the same in the US, but in the UK, nurses are involved in what we call the laying out procedures. So when a patient dies and they have to be prepared to go down into the mortuary. So they're involved with the dead probably a lot more than doctors are, really.
Again, fascinating stuff. The site is called Dead Meat. Carla, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you very much.
Carla Valentine, founder of the dating site called Dead Meat. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0282, and you'll find links to Carla's site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
If you're listening to this while walking with your iPod, make sure you look both ways before you cross the street. It's safety first on The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about 2015 by the numbers. Plus, Peter Franklin the Gabby Cabby shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. But we have lots more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program that's also heard, you may have heard, on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You know, at Stitcher Smart Radio, you can hear a myriad, a plethora, a soupçon of radio programs. A lot of them, folks. Well over 20,000 different programs, including The Stuff File, can be heard via Stitcher Smart Radio. So what are you waiting for? Download the app for Stitcher Smart Radio, and then you can hear all the radio you want on your mobile device in any kind of eclectic taste or desire that tickles your fancy. I'm talking about Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Don't you want to be smarter? Of course you do. Stitcher Smart Radio. Give it a listen. Okay, now, where were we? Oh, yeah, we seem to be calming down as a species when it comes to celebrating New Year's Eve. And we have two examples to show for it. Number one, police in Phoenix estimate celebratory gunfire into the air on New Year's Eve was down 22% from last year, since the department received reports of only 206 bullets discharged without concern for where they might land. And story number two. Authorities in Paris estimated that 12% fewer cars were set on fire in France on New Year's Eve, with only 940 strangers' vehicles mindlessly torched instead of last year's 1,067 vehicles. Gee, doesn't that bode well for the new year? Yeah. And disaster was averted at the North Okaloosa Medical Center in Crestview, Florida, when a fire broke out in the hospital's intensive care unit on Christmas Eve. Staff got it out quickly, and police were brought in because of how it started. Investigators say 54-year-old Lee Vern Cook admitted he brought crack cocaine to an ICU patient. The burning drug flared up thanks to the patient's oxygen, and the bedding caught fire along with the patient's hospital gown and oxygen mask. Cook was charged with drug possession, possession of drug paraphernalia, arson, and possession of a firearm in the commission of a felony. The unnamed patient is no longer in ICU. He or she, not quite sure what she or he was. But anyway, they were transferred to a burn unit. This is your brain on drugs. This is your ICU bed in flames on drugs. Any questions? And William Bullock's name is not on the lease for the apartment where he was staying. That's what the landlord named Chuck said in Central South Carolina. Chuck also mentioned that guests are only allowed for a week. So Chuck said if Bullock didn't leave, he might press charges, and the actual tenant, Bullock's wife, Lily, could face a 100% increase in her rent. Lily is a student at nearby Clemson University. She had just given birth 2 weeks earlier and was dealing with finals. So, no stress in her life at all, huh? Williams is a soldier stationed in Missouri. He said he would go visit family after finals, but he had concerns about what would happen to Lily when his leave expired. Okay, anybody want to take action on the over-under in the betting pool as to whether Heartless Chuck has a bumper sticker that says, "Support our troops"? I'm guessing not. And I don't think I'm going out on a limb here when I say that. I also don't think I'm going out on a limb when I say, "Chuck's a cretin." Yeah. Anyway, a man walked into a market in Plains Township, Pennsylvania, and an employee noticed he was carrying a pair of scissors in each hand. So the employee followed him to see what he was going to do with said scissors. The man with the scissors then turned and stabbed the employee, witnesses say. Joseph Prattle told police he was a pirate who came to America in 1776 on the Santa Maria. Okay, history buffs, you will be quick to note that the Santa Maria sank on Christmas in 1492 on Columbus's return voyage. But hey, let's not quibble over facts, shall we? Now, after being taken before a magistrate to face charges, including drug use, oh, go figure, a reporter asked Prattle, "Do you regret what you did?" Prattle shot back, "Nah." Hey, if he doesn't regret sinking his ship, he's barely going to worry about a little scissoring, isn't he? So he was on drugs, huh? Yeah, nothing like putting the high in high seas, you pirate. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, I love this quote, "He looks like a freaking altar boy." That's what jockey Angel Suarez Medeiros' agent said. And another agent, a former agent, added, "And he's nicer than he looks." Yet another former agent, which makes you wonder how many agents that this guy had. But anyway, another former agent said, "I don't think I've ever even heard the kid cuss." That's what the third agent explained, that his entry into racing was also a surprise move. He woke up one day, told his mom he wanted to be a jockey, and she said, "What?" Now, Suarez has since won 151 races. He won all those in 2012 and earned national attention in his field. Well, then one night, say police, see where this is going, a neighbor at the Bensalem, Pennsylvania apartment complex where Suarez lives with his girlfriend spotted him on the second floor balcony where he was, racing his own horse. There you go. Yeah, the neighbor fled and called police. Suarez broke through the glass door, was attacked by two dachshunds. Just picture that, by the way. Somebody who is jockey height being attacked by two dachshunds. There's some irony there. And he also escaped out of a window. This according to the neighbor's fiancé. Then police say Suarez broke into someone else's apartment and fought with the inhabitants, one of whom shot him. He kept fighting. Eventually, police got him under control and took him away to face surgery and also criminal charges. Even if it turns out drugs were involved, said police, there's no excuse for a high-grade felony like this. Well, it looks like this is one jockey who might have a difficult time getting his life back on track. Yikes. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? With the new year recently started, how does it shape up numerologically speaking? Well, we put that question to Yogi Akal, the numerology professor, or as we like to call him, the numerologist to the stars. Yogi Akal joins us via Skype-to-Skype communications from Toronto. Hello, sir, and Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year back to you all.
So what is 2015, or what does 2015 have in store for us, going strictly by the numbers?
Well, there are three things to take note of in 2015. The first is that it is a time for change, and the only way to make change is to do things differently. That's the way it works. No matter what you do, if you keep doing the same thing, change doesn't happen. So the name of the game for the new year is to wake up every morning and do something a little different. You'll notice in the world in general, there'll be a movement towards innovation more than we've seen in a long, long time. And you can do that for yourself as well. The second thing is that it's an important time for work progress. Finances in terms of the world and individually for making a plan. And if you make a plan, you have to stick to it. That's where sometimes people fall off their success wagon, because they make a plan and then they don't stick to it because they get sometimes too creative, and the plan is something that needs to be adhered to with some discipline. And the third thing is that it's a year of compassion, which is really fascinating, because compassion is something that's an inner process from which you can then create all kinds of qualities. And that's the key to the whole year, is having compassion within you, and from that being able to give quality to other people.
Now, it's interesting. Those are three very distinctive positive qualities all wrapped up into one year. Is this convergence unusual?
Well, that's a good question you ask, because we've just come out of a period, numerologically speaking, that is very much of a testing challenge. And over the next 3 years, 2015, 16, and 17, we're really reestablishing values before we take another leap in terms of this century. This is going to be probably the most impactful century we've had in, well, at least 500 years. It's a different kind of renaissance, where we are shifting everything in our entire understanding of the world. And it offers so much opportunity for progress, things that we've only imagined in terms of even peace. Will be possible and necessary and done as a whole world. But the process of that goes in short starts and then really big steps and short starts and big steps. This short start is about 3 years, 2015, 16, and 17, and then there's a big leap.
You are so involved into numerology. I'm just wondering, I know we, on the old radio show we used to talk about this when we had you on, that numerology was sort of like a weather forecast. It can't prevent the rain or prevent the storm. It can help you to deal with it, correct?
Right. It helps you to understand that it may be coming as well.
Exactly.
I check the weather. I like to know. It's different for different purposes. If you're a farmer or if you're a pilot, the weather is really important to you. If you're somebody who's just working in an office, then it's a matter of convenience to know the weather. But we do check it all the time. And numerology is like a little weather patterning analysis for your own life. And the reason it's so useful is because you can save yourself a lot of time and trouble by knowing the cycle or season that you're in. And I found that to be very useful.
And the reason why I bring that up is that as someone who follows numerology, it's sort of like a preview, as one could say, of like a coming attraction to a movie. And sometimes when we watch previews to movies, when we see the movie, we can either be excited by what we saw in the preview or disappointed because of what we saw in the preview.
Well, you're making me very hungry for popcorn. I'll have to add that to the list of things to do in 2015. But actually, you bring up, you know, that's an interesting point. Even you're bringing up an interesting comparison to movies. But movies have been a channel for information for the past 20 or 30 years. It's been a way for people to move a mass consciousness. It's not just entertainment. It's a way to bring information to people and shift culture. And this is a year when everybody can be a culture changer, not just Steven Spielberg. So it's a real opportunity for people at a very grassroots level, at a very personal, individual level, to make change. I can't emphasize that enough.
You mentioned the positive aspects of 2015 and what to look forward to numerologically speaking. Is there anything about 2015 that concerns you?
Yes. There are two things. One is that no matter where you are in the world, you are going to be criticized. So you have only one possibility here, and that is to enjoy it, because it's just a matter of growth. The second thing, and this is the one that, you know, can create some concern for people, whatever you did 8 years ago is going to pass now. So that's why I always tell people, be careful what you say, because you will come back and bite you. Whatever you said or did 8 years ago is coming back now. It's an eight-year cycle. So you can think back on, uh-oh, what did I do then? All that good stuff is coming to fruition. All that bad stuff is going to come back and bite you. So the best way to deal with that is to remember this compassion, because that clears everything. No matter who you are, what you've done, if you've made a mistake or you haven't completed something, compassion clears it all. Mm.
Interesting stuff indeed, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you. But I have a few more minutes, and I want to bring up some of the things that you're doing in 2015. Tell us about Yoga Without Borders.
Yoga Without Borders has been working in Toronto and around the world since the early 2000s. And about 12 months ago, we incorporated as a charity and dedicated ourselves to the eradication of violence towards girls and women worldwide. So we've been collecting hygiene supplies and sending it to girls in need, for example, in Africa and to Haiti. And this year we're starting a peer mentoring program for girls of all ages to help them in their world and to connect, as well as encouraging people to be of service in the world. Not necessarily through yoga, but remembering that sometimes when you get involved in personal development, you might forget the rest of the world. And this is an important part of the activism that goes with the maturity of a person.
And people can find out more information about that by going to your website at Yogi Akal, correct?
Or yogawithoutborders.com, and you can take a look at what we're doing there, or you can go to yogiacall.com and find out what I'm doing there.
Excellent. Now, you've told us what 2015 means, numerologically speaking. Does that break down also individually by month?
It can, and actually I have a video up on YouTube that explains it in detail. You can actually go through it month by month. It's the New Year's resolution video for 2015, and you can just check out your month of birth, and it'll tell you what to look for the whole year. It's a fun video. In fact, the video channel, Yogi Akal TV, there are several hundred videos up there, and you can watch them and learn more about numerology and yoga, meditation, and even how to relax.
Excellent, excellent. I know we were talking off air a little while ago about some of the things you're working on, and you mentioned Yoga Without Borders. Are you planning on making any trips yourself?
I'm hoping to this year. I'm hoping that without not just sending stuff out there, but perhaps going on the ground as well to Haiti and perhaps some parts of Africa, so we get a sense ourselves what we can do in terms of the peer mentoring. Using modern technology, the peer mentoring program is done online, so no one has to go anywhere. But sometimes being on the ground makes a big difference, especially when you're working on a level with young children and you're trying to get a sense of what works best for them.
Excellent stuff, sir. Again, you always do marvelous work, and it's always interesting to talk to you about numerology as well.
It's always a lot of fun to look at the numbers, no matter what we do, no matter where we are. It's always a good reference point.
People, again, can find out more information by going to your website, yogayakal.com. They can also go to yogawithoutborders.com. Thank you once again, sir, and once again, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to everyone, compassionately.
Yogi Akal from Toronto. You can check out his website at yogiakal.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0282, and you'll find the link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Several years ago, one of the winning labels in our Wacky Warning Label contest was found on a snow sled. It said, "Beware, sled may develop high speed under certain snow conditions." Well, that's the whole idea, isn't it? But lawsuits against sled makers are becoming common as more courts ignore personal responsibility. Sadly, these lawsuits are making it hard to find places to even use a sled these days. In Dubuque, Iowa, sledding will soon be banned in all but two of its 50 parks, and lawsuits over sledding accidents are the reason. No one tracks how many cities have banned sledding, but according to the Associated Press, the list grows every year. Let's be fair, it would be easy to blame cities for these bans, but the real responsibility lies with the courts. By allowing lawsuits even when reasonable safety precautions have been taken, judges have created a different kind of slippery slope in the courts, and it now threatens virtually any activity involving risk. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, for the first time of the brand new year, we are talking once again with Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City. Hello, sir.
Live from the streets of New York.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program with us.
Well, thank you.
And best of the new year to you. Now, I understand there's been a little bit of, I think the world is pretty much aware of a lot of the turmoil that's going on. What with the shooting of two police officers in New York City and the relationship between the New York Police Brotherhood and the mayor of New York. What's the latest and what are they talking about on the streets?
I'm glad you asked me that question because I have to clear this up for your nice listeners because there's so much misinformation floating around, it's crazy. First of all, in terms of the police having a slowdown, before I get to the history as to how we got to this point, it's really a bunch of New York Times baloney. I guess they're bent on trying to kill our tourist business. The only thing that the cops are doing, and they're doing it as an economic thing really, is all those crimes and summonses and tickets which have something to do with income of money, parking tickets, you know, things like that, traffic tickets, spitting on the sidewalk. That's what they've stopped enforcing. And those are tickets which, by the way, are handled more by the Department of Finance than the Department of Police. So they're not doing anything in terms of stopping as far as crime goes. That's a bunch of baloney. As a matter of fact, just the other day, two more cops got shot while they were arresting, trying to arrest some people, and they did arrest them, come to think of it, who had held up a store in the Bronx. So take it from me, streetwise guy, I'm on the streets. Nobody's getting a walk away when it comes to real crime. It's just parking tickets. And that doesn't particularly bother me, to be very honest with you. So I don't know why it's necessary for the New York Times to create this illusion that somehow we've become the lawless West. And as I say, nothing could be further from the truth. Now, let's go to the background on this. What started this whole thing off is that when de Blasio, and by the way, that's not his real name.
Okay.
We've all discovered this month that that's not his name.
And,
did you know that?
And his name is?
It's some German name.
Okay.
I know. I mean, you, right now, your listeners are saying, what did Peter just say? No, no, that's not his real name. I can't think of the name offhand. And when they finish listening to you, they can Google it, and you can see that it's not his real name.
Was he adopted?
Well, it might have something to do with his mother getting a divorce or something like that. But the thing that's curious about it is, why did he pick an Italian name?
Well, did he pick it, or was it somebody that his
no,
mother
no,
was
he
married
picked
to?
It.
Okay.
So, but it's a very complex kind of thing. It's a kind of thing like you've heard of Geraldo Rivera?
Oh, Jerry, yes.
Yeah, Jerry Rivers, the Jewish guy. Right?
Yes.
And everybody, I mean, that's what these people do. And then the rest of the media gives them, what's your real name, by the way?
Peter Anthony Holder.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, if you're gonna pick a name, you're going to pick a name that's kind of like New York. So if you're a Jewish guy, you're going to use a Latino name. And if you're a German guy, you're going to use an Italian name. But as I say, I don't have the facts and figures, you know, right in my hand. You'd have to check into why those two clowns have different names. But anyway, he was a strong proponent. He ran, de Blasio ran on a platform of getting rid of stop and search, you know, frisk. And all that. That was a situation we had in New York City where if you and I were strolling down the street arm in arm, which would be perfectly natural, a cop could come over and look at our knapsacks to see if we had a gun. Or if I'm driving a cab and you're my passenger, he could stop the car at 3 o'clock in the morning and see if you had a gun. Now, to a civil liberties person, it would be like, what are you, crazy? How can you do such a thing like that? It's an infringement on liberty and what have you. Well, it happened to have been very effective because it cut crime down tremendously. But de Blasio, and there were some people who claimed and said it was profiling and by race and things like that. That may have been true, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is most New Yorkers, even those of color, were happy to have that law. Anyway, de Blasio ran on getting rid of it. So he got rid of it. So that burnt the cops up a lot because now we have a situation where all the bad guys are carrying guns again and they're taunting cops by saying, hey, why don't you search me? Why don't you search me? You know, which they can't do anymore. So that started the whole thing off. When the guy in Staten Island, and here too, I mean, I'm getting a headache trying to explain it. Okay, he was selling loose cigarettes. In other words, not in packs with tax things on it. Which means the price of the cigarettes from him would be a lot less money than the cigarettes would have cost in a store which was charging tax. And he'd already been arrested like 30 or 40 times for doing it. And once again, the storekeepers in Staten Island were complaining about this guy selling the cigarettes. So, a black sergeant lady, did you hear what I said?
Yep.
I said a black sergeant lady. Which was kind of neglected in the news reports, organized a squad of the meanest, nastiest white cops she had and took them over to arrest the guy and was present while they were beating the hell out of the guy. Okay? And she was the boss. I bet you didn't know that, did you?
No, I did not.
Okay. You see, that's why I'm your chief correspondent. Okay, so that had happened, and to some extent there was some justification for the arrest. As far as the chokehold goes, that's in dispute. Some people said that they did do a chokehold, which killed him. Others said he just had bad health and he died in a heart attack. The bottom line of the whole thing, it was the misfortune of this black guy to encounter a really mean, nasty white cop. It's like their paths were destined to cross, and unfortunately at that moment they crossed, because I have a feeling that the white cop would have beat up his grandmother. Okay, I mean, he was just that type of guy, tough guy, not the sweetest in the world. So the guy dies, and now we have all the demonstrators, and along comes a fellow named Al Sharpton, who for some strange reason thinks that he's the spokesman for all the people of color in the United States.
Every time something happens,
everybody runs to ask him his impression.
And the thing that's interesting, you know, who didn't call him?
It's
interesting, because I was about to say, one of the things I'm surprised is I don't recall when that vote was cast.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, do you realize you're the only broadcaster in North America who didn't call him?
Well, I know. I can think of several, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, and your nice listeners understand. The guy's a big, he's a con man. He owes about $4 million in tax liens and what have you. So he starts promoting it as a race thing, a race thing, a race thing. Even if it was a race thing, shut up. Don't try to get everybody crazy. You know, should have said no. And as a matter of fact, the wife of the guy who died in Staten Island, his own wife announced that she felt it had nothing to do with race, which is another thing that seemed to be missing from media reports. And then, of course, de Blasio, my dopey mayor, comes out with the worst possible thing because he happens to be married to a black lady. And the kids, his two kids are biracial. He announces that he's always worried that his kids are going to be mishandled and arrested by white cops, and warns them when they go out on the streets of New York to behave themselves. And to that, everybody said, what did he say? Is the man crazy? First of all, it's not true. And second of all, his kids don't just walk around on the streets of New York. They have bodyguards. You know, like, say, Obama's girls or something. Can you imagine President Obama saying, I'm worried about my kids because the white Secret Service are going to beat them up or something? So that really set it over the edge, and that's what happened, and that's why the cops are very, very angry with de Blasio, very, very angry with the commissioner of the police, and they need a new contract. So all these little things come together. Well, really, the bottom line is, the cops are going to get placated if they get a good contract with more money. And I got a headache from trying to explain all of this to your nice listeners, who I hope can tape it and replay it over and over again to get some sense out of it. But if you think I got a headache from telling you, this is what's going on. It's just absolutely insanity, heaped on insanity.
And, you know, there were so many other things we had a schedule to talk about. We never got to Mario Cuomo. I know you have some thoughts on that. But we're just about out of time. I will ask one more question, though, relating to this whole situation. What was the situation that happened in a Chipotle restaurant involving police
officers? Oh, okay. That's what I'm saying. See, okay. You know, they claim that the guy in Ferguson raised his hands and said, don't shoot me.
Yeah.
Don't shoot me. Okay. Which also is under debate. Did he really do that or not? Okay. Let's make believe he did do it. Now it became among demonstrators to walk around putting their hands up in the air and saying, don't shoot me.
Hands,
don't shoot me.
Hands up, don't shoot. Right.
Right, exactly. So now these cops, eight cops, going after the donuts and coffee, go into a Chipotle in Queens, and while they're waiting in line to get in there, one of the waitresses, who they knew because they've been there many times before, puts her arms up in the air and says, don't shoot me, don't shoot me. And so the cops kind of looked at her angrily, thinking, that's not really very funny, Beatrice. Okay? And that was the end of it. And they're waiting online. And they're waiting online. They figure, well, they got to get back to work. So they left and they went to a McDonald's. So that was what really happened. What happened, and Chipotle fell for it, what happened is guys like Sharpton came along and said that the cops stamped out of there angrily, feeling that they had been insulted by the waitress and they would never go back there again, which is a good way to get free meals for the rest of the year. So that's what we're contending with here in New York City, and I'm sorry that I took up so much time, but there's so much stuff going on that just is absolutely just not real.
And bottom line, last quick question, because we're really out of time, do you think when a contract is finally signed, this will settle down?
Oh, of course. That's all it is. It's the almighty dollar. The cops, I would say, and remember, I'm in the taxi business, so I'm supposed to hate cops, 90% of the cops in New York City are good, decent people who try to do their job. And they got a mayor and that they just don't like him. Look, I mean, I don't even like the guy, and I have really no reason not to like him. It's like in so many other things in life, you like and you dislike people, which is completely irrational. So you might say that I don't like him because his wife is black. Yeah, I'd like that. That's comfortable. You can announce to everybody that the Gabby can't be said. I don't like the mayor because his wife is black.
And on that,
there it is. I said it and it's out.
On that note, I'll just let people know that people can email you at peter@gabby.com.
Yeah, I hope they all know I'm just showing the absurdity of it. You know?
And people can find out more information by going to your website at www.gabby.com. You can also get great tours of New York if you're ever in New York City.
Yes, and
Peter,
I promise I won't rant and rage while I give you a tour. You'll have a great day.
Thank you very much, sir, for being on the program with us once again. Have a good one.
Bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about at a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We have time for one more item, and you know what that would be, boys and girls? That's right. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Police responded to a report of a suspicious person in Palm Beach, Florida. They discovered Daniel Garguillo and Michael Rockford in a car. Garguillo allegedly had blood on his clothes and appeared to be high. An officer recognized Rockford as a suspect in several area burglaries, so both men were put in a patrol car and officers began searching their vehicle. While the search was going on, the men discussed their alibi and how they were going to explain the purses and power tools that were found in the car. They allegedly decided to blame another man who they would claim they dropped off at a nearby gas station. The reason we know about this discussion is because of the camera in the patrol car, which even recorded the two men noticing its presence prior to their discussion. Okay, why would two criminals plot their bogus alibi in the back of a patrol car when they already know that they're being recorded? One reason, and one reason only, they're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0282. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0282. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCore in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.